You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Hey, y'all. Welcome to the show. Welcome to the UFC Vegas 79 post-fight show, brought to you by MMAfighting.com. This is Alexander K. Lee. Welcome you all to this fine post-fight program, UFC Vegas 79. Literally just wrapped moments ago. We're here to break down all the action. We being myself, Alexander K. Lee, the lovely Jose Youngs.
Apology accepted.
And the lovely and also talented E.K. Slide. And also,
I'm muted.
Yes, he does not speak. He's beyond words. He's more than words, like extreme.
Yeah.
Which I'm sure we all remember. Kind of a bummer to what I thought was a pretty solid card. It took a bit of time to get going, if we're talking about, you know, going from the very first fight to the end. But I think we had some very solid action. Someone asked me on Twitter, was one of the worst cards of the year? I don't think so at all. I thought it was a fine fight night. That was very solid. Some very good back and forth fights, some good finishes. But the final fight of the night definitely did not have a good finish, not satisfying. We just saw Rafael Fiziev go down with what looks like a leg injury. Don't want to speculate what kind, but it appeared to kind of be non-contact. He throws a kick. The kick is blocked. His posting leg is the one that appeared to get injured, not the kicking leg. So, you know, in other sports, that is usually a bad sign. But we don't know. Hopefully it's something harmless. We can see Rafael Fiziev back in there. But hopes, you know, thoughts and prayers to him. A lot of fighters online giving their thoughts and prayers as well. But Mateusz Gamrot, officially the winner. This was a pretty highly anticipated lightweight fight. I think we were all very excited to see it. After one round, it was looking awesome. We were seeing good striking. We were seeing good scrambling. It was really exciting scramble right at the end of the round. And, you know, I think we were all thinking, oh, yeah, we were hyping up this fight real big. And this is paying off. But injuries happen in every sport. They definitely happen in MMA. And they can happen in main events, too. So, Jose, how are you feeling after this card in general? But of course, that unfortunate incident we just saw.
It was kind of a bummer of a card, not in terms of match quality, but like how things played out and things that were said. Like there were a lot of one-sided fights that I'm like, oh, this is a little sad to watch. There was a disqualification. There was talks of secret lasers. There was an injury in the main event. It just a little bit of a bummer of a card, but all in all, like in terms of action, it was a decent it started off not great. The first two, three fights weren't great, and then like the Miles John fight was really fun. Charles Dardenne obviously did his thing, apparently the only Canadian on the UFC roster according to whoever said that on air. But yeah, a little bit of a bummer in terms of how things played out a bit, but action wise not bad. Definitely not the worst card.
Is there anything we can take away from the main event? I thought we did a great job of breaking it down, the stakes for both guys, how good they look going into this fight, you know, their recent form. Does this move either guy towards the top five, towards a contender? What fight could be next? We get this abrupt ending. Is there anything we can take away from what we saw, Jose?
That lightweight division is still the best division in MMA, and the top of the division is a little stagnant, and it's a lot of people that not as bad as welterweight, but like Mateusz Gamrot beat Rafael Fiziev, he gets in the top five. He should be fighting someone in the top five. I just don't know if any of those guys are willing to take that fight. And that's the difficult part, because if Mateusz Gamrot had just like, or Rafael Fiziev, like we said, had like dominated or like submitted or wheel kicked or like something super impressive, like Justin Gaethje versus Dustin Poirier or something like that, then we could be talking about all these fun matchups. But there was a definitive ending, but it wasn't the ending that we wanted. And I'm not saying it was an accident by any means, because like Gamrot said in his post-fight interview, like he had been practicing that defense quite a bit. But no one wants to see an injury, especially after that awesome first round. I don't know where Gamrot goes from here, because he should be fighting someone like a Dustin Poirier, but they're not going to give him that, because Dustin Poirier is probably not going to take that fight. So they also train together, so that's like a whole nother thing, because like a bunch of lightweights train at ATT. Michael Chandler's there too. Benil Dariush is there too. But I always hear Armin is going to fight Benil, and Gamrot already fought Armin. And I guess there's the main event next week, but that still seems a little low for Gamrot. So murky waters at the top of the lightweight division. That's for sure.
Did he call out Charles Oliveira after?
Yeah, he did that too. And I'm like, well, he's like, my dream fight is Islam, but that obviously can't happen. So I want to fight Charles. I'm like, come on, guy. Like, know your division. I mean, honestly, if Charles loses, I wouldn't hate that fight. That fight kind of makes sense. But if Charles wins, you'd assume they're going to do the rematch of the trilogy fight.
Where I think Gamera was going. I think he assumes that Charles is going to lose the rematch or lose to Islam a second time and that he would get that fight. But he kind of got ahead of himself. He is also doing an interview not in his native language. So, you know, maybe he couldn't quite articulate what he meant by it. Casey, what did you think of his post-fight speech and that particular call-out?
Oh, I didn't listen to post-fight speech.
He called for Charles.
I was setting up this beautiful post-show.
He called for Charles. He called for Charles Oliveira again.
It's not going to happen. Like, these guys don't keep up with the fights. I mean, they're too worried about their own thing. They're like, I don't know. Dude, I don't care about call-outs. I don't care. Like, when you're at the top, either Gamrot fights someone right above him or slightly right behind him. That's about it. I just want to see Gamrot fight again, and I want to see Mr. Fazeev get healthy, and I want to see him back in the cage, and hopefully in the future we may get a rematch.
The problem it's super tough because, like, just going off of the UFC rankings, which is what they're going to use when they try to make these fights, not the MMA fighting ones. Like, Fazeev's probably going to – I mean, Gamrot's probably going to jump up to 6. They're probably going to swap places. Michael Chandler's right above him. He's going to fight Connor. He already fought and lost to Beneil. Dustin's not going to fight him. Justin's not going to fight him. Charles already has a fight. So if he wants to – if Mateusz Gamrot wants another fight, like, relatively soon – he has to basically go to outside the top 10 or fight like a Jalen Turner, Moicano, Frivola type guy. Those are like the only guys. He has to go way outside the top 10.
And his opponents are so dangerous too. Just thinking like he just fought Jalen Turner to sort of, I guess, hold on to. I would have ranked him ahead of Jalen. So maybe hold on to a spot. I don't know how high they had Jalen. And that was a super tough fight. I mean, you saw how dangerous that fight was. He did take that one on short notice, but still... thinking about this. AK. Yeah, yes.
Tap your mic.
Yes, Casey.
Tap your
What's
mic.
What's going on?
It just sounds echoey.
Is it not coming through? It sounds, I've got a lot of mic problems. I've got some production problems on my side. I am not proud of it. Okay. I'm not proud of it, but this is where.
Mic heck, the microphone, a lot of mics.
This is where we are right now. I'll just make sure I'm using the correct mic, but yeah, I apparently am. Anyway, all right, I apologize. Cool. I apologize. I need to get a new mic. It's in the system. All right.
Apology accepted.
Thank you. Well, that's why you said it ahead of time.
Yeah.
Oh, real quick, though, on the post-fight thing, though, Gamrot was confused, though, because he thinks, and I don't blame him because, like, people were asking, was the celebration kind of odd? Because I think he thought he broke, and initially I think we all thought, with the block, he had elbow blocked Fazeev's leg and maybe broke his foot or broke his shin with his elbow block, which is a legit block. But upon further review of Fazeev's reaction, seems like it was the posting leg that his knee got messed up on, which blew out. So kind of, basically the injury was a complete fluke. I understand Gamrot trying to, I blocked that, which is fine. I get it, you know, but it looked like it was completely just a posting leg and a complete fluke injury. So in terms of post-fight interview, that's the only thing to take note of.
Yeah, again, it all happened so quickly, right? I mean, he even didn't even know the fight was over, right? He saw Fazeev went down, and he went in for some ground and pound because that's what he's supposed to do. That's his job.
That's all instinct, yeah.
Yeah, so he didn't know. He had no idea what happened. He just thought, I think Fazeev fell back, and then it ended pretty quickly, thankfully. So not too much extra damage for Fazeev. But yeah, again, Gamrot not doing an interview in his native language, a very confusing situation. You probably still feeling somewhat the high of a victory, but not really being able to celebrate it and also kind of, do a call out that you would normally do when you had a big win. Yeah. I think we were all more concerned for Fazeev in that moment. I don't think the Chandler fight is unreasonable. I know. I apologize to all the Tough Hang viewers out there. I know I was beating that drum saying, Michael Chandler is going to get that Connor fight. Don't give up, my friends. Don't give up. I'm starting to lose faith. I have to be objective. Casey, don't be disappointed in me. I have to be objective. And just looking at the facts, it's possible that fight does not happen. And if Gamera wants a big name and not go outside the top 10, because we, as Jose pointed out, it does feel like that's what's going to happen.
Never going to happen.
That's probably his best shot. Chandler's probably his best shot, right?
Never going to happen.
No?
Chandler's never. Just going to wait years and years and years for Conor?
I don't think Michael Chandler is going to say, all right, I'm done waiting for Conor McGregor to fight Mataush Gamera.
Does he fight?
Exactly.
Yeah, who is he going to fight?
There's literally no one right now. When I say there's literally no one, I don't mean there's not literally anyone. He should fight Mataush Gamera. I'm assuming that Michael Chandler is at the point of his life, just like Dustin Poirier, where Dustin Poirier literally said, you can go watch it on MMA Fighting's YouTube channel, I don't want to fight these up-and-coming guys. I want to fight, you know, bigger names. That's what he said, and I feel like Michael Chandler's on that same boat. Yeah. So unless they're signing the corpse of Eddie Alvarez away from BKFC, I don't think there's anyone that Chandler's right now is going to be like, unless it's like Gaethje or Poirier rematches. I don't think there's anyone.
Yeah, it's a huge drop off. I mean, but I don't know how much of a choice these guys are going to have eventually if they need to fight, if they need to get a paycheck, if they need to stay relevant and not be, you know, not fall out of the rankings.
So. I don't know if this is too much of a change of subject, but whose fault is this? Is this the UFC's fault or is this a fighter's fault?
For what?
Ranking squatting kind of we have. Whose fault is it? Is it the UFC just not paying enough it's money not, for I mean, these
the,
guys?
I don't think the lightweight division wasn't as bad this past year, because like we had the Turner Gamrots, we had the Armin versus whoever he fought, we had Gaethje Poirier rematched when they did, like they were there in the rankings, we had like Gaethje fought Fiziev when Fiziev was a super dangerous opponent that wasn't very popular, Beneil Dariush was on that long win streak and still fought Charles Oliveira, who had just lost. I don't think lightweight is as bad as welterweight. I think right now there's a little bit of a logjam over the last like month and a half. Mm-hmm. Welterweight was bad. Lightweight's not as bad.
Yeah. But I think Casey, your point, we always say it comes down to dollars and cents. There's other reasons. There's political reasons. There's career timing reasons. But at the end of the day, if you told Michael Chandler he's going to get X amount of dollars, you know, maybe not Conor money, but like a big fat check to fight Mateusz Gamrot, yeah.
He'll
get paid way less and make and a cover opponent. Yeah.
I don't think he would, like, because, again, great website. You go to MMAfighting.com's YouTube channel.
Great website.
And at the USC 292 post guest fighter scrum, we were backstage. Jose Youngs was backstage. And Michael Chandler literally said, I don't need the money. I want to fight Conor. I don't think it's going to be a dollars and cents thing with Michael
Chandler. Says that?
That is the biggest lie ever.
That's a lie.
Here's the thing.
He wants to fight Conor for the martial arts honor and not the paycheck.
No, I think he wants to fight Conor because if you beat Conor, then you become very famous. That's literally it. I don't think it's the money. For Michael Chandler.
But as a great man once said, maybe the greatest man once said, every man has a price. Ha 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 ha. Mm. So you have to add in the laugh. It's part of the quote. So I do think, not just talking about Chandler specifically, but as Casey pointed out, these guys want fame, prestige, but they want the money that comes with those things as well. And I think if the money was right, you can make any fight you want happen, but
yeah, absolutely.
This is a whole other discussion. Yeah. As Casey, maybe we're getting a little too in the weeds here.
Yeah.
Very disappointing end to the fight. I'm not sure what else we can say. I don't want to. I'll say people in the comments throw out who you think should be next for Gamrot, but I will give my own pick on to the next one tomorrow, and I will gladly steal your answers if you guys throw one in there and not give you any credit. So please feel free to leave something in the comments there, because we certainly had plenty to talk about in the co-main event.
Ooh.
Did we not?
Yeah.
Very good fight. Very good fight. I think a very enjoyable three-rounder. Jose, you were saying, I have not seen the post-fight bonuses yet. You were saying earlier this week, we need to normalize rewarding fights that are grappling contests as Fight of the Nights. And I thought this was a wonderfully entertaining grappling contest. I'm not a jiu-jitsu expert by any means. Mm-hmm. You guys both know grappling better than I do. So even as a dirty grappling casual, I was mesmerized by some of these exchanges. It's not just big scrambles. It's like the way these moments were developing. Because Dan Ige is so good on the ground, but you know when you have that relentlessness of Bryce Mitchell, it's hard to deal with. That's how you win fights. But defensively, Danny Ige, I thought, was fantastic, did everything he could. And I thought Bryce Mitchell did enough to win. But it was a really good fight. So just your thoughts on that one, Jose.
Yeah, it was like watching a human Rubik's Cube in there. Like, they would just like constantly shift around one another. Like, Bryce Mitchell would attempt a transition or a takedown, and Dan Ige would defend takedowns beautifully. And then Bryce Mitchell would kind of have, what's the word? Like, counters isn't the word, but I'm just going to use it. Counters for like Dan Ige's defenses. Like, when Ige tried to sit down against the fence, Bryce Mitchell adjusted and secured the takedown. Dan Ige had the whizzer, and then Bryce Mitchell, like in the third round, when he got the back from that super awkward position, I thought that was a lot of fun. Yeah, it was a very, very fun grappling MMA fight. Obviously, in a real jiu-jitsu competition, it was not the highest of levels. But when you add punches and kicks and ground and pound, it was a very enjoyable fight to watch if you like high action grappling. And Danny Gay was obviously getting the better on the feet. Bryce Mitchell continues to show he is very average at striking when you're looking at the rest of the top 10 of featherweight. He's much better striker than anyone on this panel. I will admit that. But if we're talking the top 10 of the featherweight division, probably not the best, but like, I would favor him against like Giga. I would favor like the Brian Ortega fight would be fun. Like, the Yair Rodriguez fight would be fun. Like, if Bryce Mitchell can get you down, have fun with that, because seems like a difficult guy to get off you.
I think Mitchell versus anyone is actually entertaining. I absolutely love watching.
He's not a lead blanket, as they say. He's like an high action.
Yeah, very grappler. Yeah, very.
And unfortunately, you have to separate Bryce Mitchell versus Bryce Mitchell, the in cage fighter.
Oh, we'll talk about that.
Sometimes you can't.
I know. I'm very focused on his actual fighting style. If I score this fight round by round, I actually gave the fight to Ige, but pride rules, Mitchell won the fight. I think the right guy won the fight.
For sure.
So I have no issue with the score. But just talk about Bryce Mitchell in general. I just think it's amazing. He is a legitimate top 10 featherweight in the UFC in a very tough division with really, I don't want to say zero striking, but he's not really a threat striking at all. And yet, even with this non-threat in 50% of mixed martial arts, he can still beat a lot of guys. And he beat a very quality, high-level gatekeeper, Dan Ige. And he won tonight. And I was actually thoroughly impressed of Bryce Mitchell. And I don't think a healthy Bryce Mitchell beats Ilia Topuria. But I do believe that we did see a weakened version of Bryce
Mitchell. Compromised.
Diminished version of Bryce Mitchell when he fought Topuria. I don't think he beats Topuria, but I think that is a more competitive fight, much more akin to what we saw tonight, but obviously, you know, a little different. But no, Bryce Mitchell is awesome. I love watching him fight. I love his grappling style. And I think it's pretty amazing that, you know, Dan Ige comes from an amazing camp, amazing coaches. Bryce Mitchell comes from a small MMA school in Arkansas with no other notable other fighters or training partners or coaches, and yet somehow he finds something there that which makes him a really, really good, entertaining mixed martial artist. And I'm always impressed by his fighting style.
Yeah, I like that you put some Arkansas on the Arkansas. I like that, Casey. I like that. I scored it for Mitchell. Super close fight. He's just another guy who's an example. If you have an A-level skill, I think his wrestling, I'd say it's far. I'd go as far as say A-level. Maybe not A+. Maybe I wouldn't put him above the elite of grapplers, but very strong skill. And you have great cardio, and you're tough as hell. Takes you pretty far in this industry. We've seen a lot of fighters have great careers with it, and Mitchell might be in that area. Yeah, maybe he's not a top five guy. We don't know, but firmly in the top 10, and I think would give a good fight to a lot of the guys in the near the top of the division. Yeah. I'm seeing a lot of comments about the judging. I will say, as someone who has been pushing very hard for people to recognize, like, yes, damage should be prioritized 100%. I don't have a problem with people scoring the fight for Ige. But I don't think – and I should say, we need to remember in the rules, it is not damage. The phrasing in the rules is not damage. It is impact. It is impact. Impact is the word they use. The impact that has the greatest effect on potentially ending the fight. So it's a little specific, and it's certainly open to interpretation, which I think is why we have a lot of problems. And this is where, you know, people are saying, how could Mitchell win that second round? Ige, you know, opened him up with that punch. And I agree. I scored the second round for Ige, but I kind of understand the 30-27 Bryce. Not my favorite scorecard, but I don't think it's like a terrible card. I think Bryce controlled a lot of that round and was effectively attacking on the ground and trying to do things to end the fight on the ground. We can't just say because someone gets cut that they automatically win a round, because
no.
You guys know cuts can happen just from the seam of the glove. Yeah. Someone's toenail cuts someone open. It doesn't mean they landed a super damaging strike. I thought Ige was doing good stuff on the feet, but for me, the cut is not an automatic 10-9 for Ige. If you want to say because in general he did more damage with the striking that round, totally understand, but I thought Bryce's grappling was really good. So I would have given round two to Ige. I had a 29-28 Mitchell. I understand 29-28 Ige as well. It's a close fight. It was a close fight, great fight. But let's not confuse damage for an automatic round win.
And if you're interested, I find this really interesting. According to fan scoring MMA decisions,
ooh,
70% of fans gave Ige round one, 76% of fans gave Ige round two.
And I understand that.
In total, 64% gave Ige the fight.
How's the media? How was the so-called media, MMA media?
This is actually interesting. Media did not score like the fans. I would say about two-thirds of the media had it for Bryce Mitchell, with a third of those fans giving all three rounds to Bryce Mitchell, which I kind of highly disagree with. But like I said, I feel the right guy won, even though by rounds, I think Ige won. But if that makes sense.
Right.
I don't want to say prize scoring, but the I don't want to say that word. But the gap that Mitchell won round three was so much bigger than the gap that Ige might have won the first two rounds, in my opinion.
Right. This comes down to our issues in general with the sort of the 10-9 scoring system how weird it is that some 10-9s are so different.
I'm really interested in how much the discussion changes too if those first two rounds, because essentially rounds one and round two were kind of the same. The first 3 minutes were Ige dominating the stand-up. Then he gets taken down, and basically it's him working off his back or getting out of a submission for the last 2 minutes. And so seems a lot of people gave the rounds to Mitchell because of that. If you switch those around, put the first 2 minutes of Ige working off his back and then the last 3 minutes of him getting Mitchell getting beat up, I think we have more of a different discussion here.
Maybe it changes the perception of it for sure. This is why judging is difficult. I am someone who has not been as hard on judges as people. I know people are quick to, every time there's a controversial card, oh my god, judges suck, get rid of all the judges, overhaul the, I'm like, it's not, they're not as bad as you think. It's a scoring system that is pretty difficult to wrap your head around, and that I'm fine with constantly nitpicking and criticizing. The judges, there are some bad ones. Don't get me wrong, there are some bad ones. But the people think like every judge is bad. I'm like, that's just not the case. I want to go, we'll talk about the speech in a second. I do want to go to a comment from Alex L here. Not me, another Alex L, who I think sums up the damage thing best. Damage would be a rough criteria anyway. Some people show damage more than others. You can fart in Nate Diaz's face and it blows his skin apart, but it won't end him in a fight. So that's how I think I'm going to explain it from now on. When people ask, what's the difference between damage and impact, and why shouldn't we rely on damage? Because, you know, you can fart in someone's face and blow their skin apart. It doesn't mean that they're close to losing the fight. Jose, I do want to go to you because I don't want to talk about the post-fight speech too much. I'll give a quick summary for people who maybe didn't see it. Bryce Mitchell, very pious, came to the ring with a Bible, tells Dan Ige, I'm donating $5,000 to you, because Dan Ige is from Hawaii. This is for, you know, to help victims of the Maui wildfires, and we need to show that Satan cannot do anything in the face of the power of Christ. So, you know, got religious with it, not the worst thing, and then had to repeat this conspiracy theory he said before, that it's an unfounded conspiracy theory, by the way, that the fires are man-made. And anyway, he went off a little bit, but didn't go full Bryce. So, Jose, before I move on, your quick thoughts on Bryce Mitchell's post-fight speech?
Well, people's religions, I don't particularly like. Do you? Mm-hmm. You know, like, you can believe whatever you want as long as you're not harming another person. I have no patience for government conspiracy theories. I just don't, because they're just unfounded theories. And, you can say whatever you want, doesn't mean you're right. And a lot of people don't believe that. And I just have zero, I have zero patience for it. I have zero patience for space laser theories. I have zero patience for 9/11 was an inside job. I have no patience for fake moon landings. I have not, I have no patience for any of that, because like, what's, I just don't have patience for it. I, like, when someone brings it up, I'd tune out. I'm like, you, I have nothing else to say on it.
You're it's tuning so out right now. It's, just talking about it. I can so, see your brain. It's so your silly, brain's shutting
it's
down.
So, it's so silly and so stupid. And people like are like, oh, Germans are trying to use Uber to take over America. I'm like, for what reason? For what reason? And they're like, they're just doing it. I'm like, okay, great. Good to know. I'm going to go use Uber now.
I was kind of waiting for Mike Bisping to like pull the microphone away, but I guess it kind of that part came out of nowhere. I guess the conspiracy part, he was kind of borderline, like, all right, we're talking about the wildfires, good. He's donating money. He's donating $5,000. That's good. Sure. Lead, you know, have Ige looked a little uncomfortable. I think he handled it as well as he could. He just kind of was nodding along, and then they did a bit of a post-fight prayer. I don't know what Ige's belief system is. I don't know if he's just humoring Bryce Mitchell or if he was super into it. I couldn't tell, but he did look a little like, let's get through this. Let's not make a big deal out of this. Let's get through this.
So. I just lost a fight. You know, that was I just lost half my paycheck. You know, this sucks. You know, thanks for the Maui check. Yeah, I appreciate it.
It's a tough fight too. He probably just wants to go back and like, you know, be with his friends, his team, patch himself up, drink some water, rehydrate. Like, yeah, it was a tough fight. That's a hard fight. That was a hard 15 minutes.
You know, but you mentioned should have Bisping, like, was he thinking about pulling the mic? I'm glad he didn't, because if all the crazy stuff Bryce Mitchell says, I still kind of appreciate it, because that's what makes this sport so fun and dumb. And exciting, because we have guys like freaking Bryce Mitchell, who would just say the craziest crap, and who can fight the highest levels. And then we have guys like Dan Ige, who are equally as good. And this is, they're cool dudes, you know. It's just, hey, you know, I just want to get back to my family, you know, see my baby. And I just think it's, I always just find that aspect of the sport so interesting. So and all the craziness of it, I'm still like, it's still better to have the craziness than be boring.
It takes all kinds to move the world, as they say, or in Bryce's case, I guess, flip the world over, tilt the world. I don't know how you guys want to phrase it, but it takes all kinds, as they say. We'll get to some questions in a second, but let us talk about probably what was going to be the most talked about fight of the night before Gamrot Fazeev kind of ended so unceremoniously. A bit of a strange booking, Marina Rodriguez, Michelle Waterson Gomez rematch of a very good 5-round fight, but just, you know, the timing seems a bit odd. Marina dominated this fight, incredibly vicious first round effort, just a Muay Thai clinic, slicing up the karate hottie, and definitely leading to some online calls for people to say, oh, they should stop the fight, and then saying maybe the corner should stop the fight. Jose, I'll go to you. Do you think we should have seen a stoppage there from either referee Kerry Hatley, or do you think her corner maybe should have not let her come out for round two?
Difficult to say. I didn't really have an opinion on it. And then when they put the camera on her between rounds, and she was like I think it was Winklejohn was like trying to give her instructions, and Michelle was just like trying to catch her breath and just spitting out blood. I'm like, well, she's clearly not listening to what you're saying. And then she just goes, I'm overreaching. And then Wink was like, yeah, you're overreaching. I'm like, okay. So she understands what she's doing. So I don't know. I don't know what the right answer is. I think if they had stopped the fight, I wouldn't have complained. And if the fact that they stopped it when they did, I'm also not going to complain. I don't know the right answer. I'm not in her corner. I'm not the ref. I wouldn't have complained if they stopped the fight, though. But I'm also very much on the, if a fighter is continuing to fight back, then you should probably give him an opportunity to fight back.
Yeah, I don't know if anyone would have complained, except for maybe Dominic Cruz in the call, who probably would have said, oh, I'll tell you, I know a thing or two about early stoppages, because, you know, he rarely mentions the Keith Peterson incident, right? So he probably would have commented in some way. I think what was his verdict? I think he said he kind of approved, right, of letting her.
Yeah, yeah.
I think he handled it well.
Who was the ref? I'm sorry.
This is Kerry Hatley.
Kerry Hatley. Kerry Hatley. I feel was known for having some very late stoppages. So
okay. But this is at least consistent.
It was consistent.
And Casey, I want to go to you specifically because we have talked about this before. This isn't a secret. We do sometimes feel there's such things as girl stoppages in MMA where, you know, if a referee sees a woman fighter taking like a lot of damage, especially where it's visible, you know, like it's not just like a flurry, but like in this exact situation where one fighter is bloodied, bruised, getting battered. We have sometimes, you and I would agree, we have sometimes seen stoppages that maybe if it was a man, they would have let go on. So I think that's why in this situation, I was kind of okay with how everything played out. And like Jose said, I don't even necessarily blame her corner, because they have a better, you know, idea of what's going on in her head, and they're right up there, they're right in her face. But I don't know, where did you stand? Are you glad it wasn't stopped, or were you calling for that one to be called off?
It was one. I was glad it wasn't stopped. I thought actually I thought Carrie Hatley did a good job. I thought the corner did, Michelle's corner did a decent job of making sure that her head was still in the fight, and I feel like she was. I feel like she still wanted to fight. I feel like she still had that will to win. But I would have been okay if there was a stoppage in the first round. I actually scored that first round a 10-7 because if you throw a 10-7 out there,
agreed.
Yeah, 10-7 is kind of mean to me that you could have stopped that fight, it'd have been fine. But like I said, Michelle Waterson is a experienced veteran fighter. These are two top 10 fighters in their weight class. They deserve that respect of basically earning that chance to get their ass kicked to get that win. And I don't have any issues with it. It was a very one-sided fight. I mean, I picked Marina Rodriguez to win, but I was shocked at the dominance that Marina Rodriguez had in that fight. So I don't know. I guess we can talk about the futures next, but no issues. Good job, Mr. Hatley. And actually good job with Dominic Cruz, I felt, and basically saying, Hey, this is what we signed up for. This is it. And honestly, there wasn't a lot of head trauma in the sense that the head wasn't bouncing back or swiveling around. It were cuts. But, cuts are, yeah, obviously are super
optically bad.
Optically, I grant it does look bad. And I am happy we did not get the quote unquote girl stoppage.
Casey, do we see the Karate Hottie retire within the next year? Whether this is her last fight, which I would doubt, or do we think her and her team start angling for that one last fight within the next 12 months? What do you think?
That is up to her. If she is okay, it's kind of that Korean zombie thing where you have to accept I'm not a championship level fighter anymore. And that's Michelle Waterson just simply isn't. She's a borderline top 15 strawweight, I think, at this point. Could be worse. I'm not sure, honestly. So she needs to decide for herself. Does she want to be brought in to build up these upcoming strawweights, or just, you know, lay it in line and go, hey, this is my retirement fight. Let's have a big celebration. Give me a proper opponent. And that proper opponent, I think, should be Jessica Penne, who I think is kind of retired, but you can pull her out of retirement and do Michelle Waterson versus Jessica Penne too. And it can be in a kind of an official double retirement fight for both those ladies. It can be a rematch of their legendary Invicta Atomweight Championship fight. So that's my two cents.
I should have given a little more context here before I throw to Jose. Waterson Gomez now 6-8 in the UFC. Her fourth straight loss, 6-7. And she's been fighting
7-2. Yes.
7-7, the Angela Hill fight. And she's been fighting professionally since 2007. So she is, if she fights until next February, it will be 17 years in the game. And again, when you look at how long she's been fighting high level competition, it's a hard 16-17 years. So same question to you, Jose. Do we see Karate Hottie consider a retirement fight in the next 12 months?
Yeah, probably. Again, I'm with Casey. Like, I'm not going to tell a fighter to retire. But I like the Jessica Penne fight. I think it makes sense for both of them because she's not in the top 15. I would imagine she falls out of the top 15, and I don't want to, you know, feed her to someone that'll do – like, you know, I just don't – I want to see both – like, Jessica and Michelle has given so much to the sport. I think it's a good fight for both of them to go out. It's very reminiscent of, like, the Jim Miller-Cowboy fight where, obviously, Jim Miller didn't retire. But, like, that fight just made sense for the end of their – like, and then they tried to book the Lozon fight for a while with Cowboy. I like those fights. Just two vets that should just throw down inside an octagon. And, yeah, I'm all for the Penne fight.
We have bonuses. I'll get to those in a second. First, I'll just recap the rest of the main card. We had we had Brian Battle submitting AJ Fletcher. Poor AJ Fletcher. I don't know. This is like a third straight guy, third straight like 6 foot plus welterweight they put in his way. I don't know what AJ Fletcher did. Poor guy keeps getting in there with giants. Gets submitted and Charles Rodin with a very impressive submission win over Ricardo Ramos. Now we have our bonuses here. Charles Rodin got one of them. And Marina Rodriguez the other, and then fight of the night goes to a prelim welterweight battle between Tim Means and Andre Fialho. Did they get it right, guys?
I enjoyed watching the Miles John Dan Argueta fight more than the Tim Means fight. But I get it because that was a little more back and forth. The Tim Means had a little more drama because they both got hurt at times. But in terms of just a fight that I watched that entire fight, and like halfway through the second round, I was between Johns and Argueta. I was like, this is a fun fight. I am having a blast watching this. So maybe that's the only other one I can think of, but I guess.
Yeah. Great fight. Love watching Miles Johns go. Casey, Eddie, would you want to change any of those
for fight of the night?
Fight of the night or performance bonuses, or did you think someone else
bonuses are fine? I would like to see a performance bonus. I would give it to Mitchell Ige. Honestly, for fighting, I thought it was just a higher level fight. But I also can't speak about Means Fialho because I was watching another channel at the same time, the best middleweight in the world defend his belt. Yeah. So I can't.
The Tim Means Andre Fialho fight just confirmed everything that I had been saying for a long time. Andre Fialho is a very good boxer, and that's it. That's about it. He has good box angles and he has really fast hands. Tim Means adjusted and Fialho had nothing for it.
Yeah.
He's just like, Tim Means did the silly thing of mixing the martial arts, and Andre Fialho's like, what is happening? And then like, just,
man, when Fialho loses, he loses big. You got to respect that.
Yeah, he does. He's 50 G's richer. He's 50 G's richer, guys.
That dude just walks forward. Tim Means was throwing those elbows, and then Fialho adjust. Fialho did an adjust, but he just wasn't hesitant in the second round. Like, he came out hot, and then Tim Means was like, oh, shit, and then, like, got clipped a few times. And then Tim Means basically – he did this thing where he was, like, very hurt and backed into the fence, and Fialho did this very stupid thing that we always say, like, that's what separates, like, veterans and, like, these newcomers. He just ran in and tried to finish him, and Tim Means clinched up, caught his breath, and then just started elbowing him a bunch in the head, like, just walked right into his trap.
Fialho, I wonder if this will save his job. That is four straight loss for him. Fight of the night used to be pretty good for job security. I don't know if it is anymore. I'd have to look recently. I think there's been fighters who have won fight of the night and still either not got their contract renewed or cut. Tim Means, this was his 50th pro fight. And by the way, this may surprise you, his first ever UFC fight of the night bonus. He's always in good
fight
fights.
Fight of the night, yeah. Because
he's always in good fights.
He's performance bonus, never an actual straight fight. All right.
So happy fight number 50 to Tim Means. And fight number 50, extra 50 grand. How appropriate. And Andre Fialho, maybe hanging on. And congrats as well to Marina Rodriguez and Charles Jourdain for those bonuses. Casey, what do we got as far as questions go?
Oh, questions? That's it.
We can go right to the questions. You're a busy man. I heard you got to go to the club later. I didn't say which club.
Okay. All right.
There's only one club to go to in LA.
All right.
I don't even know what that means. I don't even get that joke.
You don't live in America, bro.
I don't live in. I'm so far away from you guys.
Before, because we're MMA fighting, not UFC fighting. There were some other important fights. Can we talk about those briefly?
Sure. No. We had 20 important fights happen in Dublin.
I don't know about 20 important ones. There are a few.
they're all important.
What was your favorite Bellator prelim fight, Casey?
Oh, I watched none of the prelims.
MMA fighting. Every fight is important here, according to MMAfightings.com.
That's why
I saw some JJ Wilson. I'm a JJ Wilson fan, so it was nice to see him come back, moving up to 55, and he had a nice comeback victory. But that's when I tuned in. So I missed the first 10 or so locals fighting, but then I did see the JJ.
So you watched the debacle of the Peter Quigley fight?
Toe in the eye. Yeah, what a bummer.
Wow. it was an illegal soccer kick.
Was that what I just
yeah,
saw?
Yeah, he soccer kicked him. That was like, all right, that was stupid. And then that was a wrap.
We saw one of the best knockouts of the year. Mr. I don't say his name. Levin
Shockley.
Shockley.
There you go.
The front kick to Sabahomasi.
Talk about a guy who's always an exciting fight. Sabahomasi. Yeah.
Talk about
get
a guy.
Get or get got. This guy
loses
get
got. Bad. Yeah. Oh, man.
Yeah.
And happy trails to Daniel Weichel.
Yeah.
He retired tonight.
Fighting for a long time.
Yeah. Retired tonight after
7,000 MMA fights.
Yeah, 7,000 MMA fights.
Approximately 7,000.
Yeah, give or take.
Aaron Pico, big win in the co-main event. Yeah. Highlight reel knockout.
Dude, Aaron Pico. This was the Aaron Pico. This is one, like, unreal. Unreal. I'm going to Albuquerque in a few weeks. So hopefully I'll get some mat time of Aaron Pico. And hopefully he won't put me on a stretcher in 30 seconds.
So. So he's dangerous. And he's not even in his physical prime yet. You got to remember, he's 26 years old. He's in amazing shape. I mean, his pre-prime is better than most human beings' physical prime.
Dude, but Aaron Pico, this is like Daddy Pico now. Now that he's now he's all about that baby, and like it's like his baby and his horse, and that's what he has even more motivation. Like, yeah, I think the Aaron Pico experiment at Jackson's is finally kind of coming together, and I'm very excited to see what Bellator slash PFL or whatever. Whoever, actually, I have no idea what happens next with Aaron Pico. I don't know if it happens with the contracts. It's going to be wild. I don't know if they're free agents. Who knows? It's going to be kind of a crazy time with all these, this Bellator sale and stuff, because Aaron Pico and Johnny Eblen are top of the rankings in
Johnny Eblen. Your number one ranked middleweight in the world battled through some adversity against, I think, a very good middleweight, Fabian Edwards. I hate people saying like, "Oh, this was just some random title." Fabian Edwards is really good. He's number 14 in our rankings, in our global.
Yeah, I don't know why people are dogging on Fabian Edwards. I'm not sure.
No, he wouldn't make it in the UFC. It's like, why wouldn't Fabian Edwards make it? The middleweight is not like this insane Shark Tank of division. I think Fabian would be a top 10 middleweight in the UFC. He's very good, and Johnny Eblen definitely be top five, if not again number one. He's looked excellent. Someone asked me how many title defenses is this guy going to put together. I said as many as he wants if he stays in Bellator, frankly, because I think he's super deadly. They have good competition there, but I just think he's a notch above. So yeah, huge win for him. A really good night, really good day for Bellator, frankly. I think people, if you're not in the Eblen bandwagon now, I don't know what you're waiting for, because he's beating good guys. He beat Musasi. If you're only comparing him to UFC guys, that's just so silly. Then you don't know what you're watching. Then you don't know what you're watching when you see Johnny Eblen fight, because he would clearly be a strong competition, if not favored, against many of the fighters in the UFC's top 10 right now. So I don't know. Maybe we're overhyping. I don't know, guys. I don't know. Maybe we're overhyping.
Yeah. All right. I think we can go to questions now.
Let's go to some questions, Casey. You, what do we got here?
Yeah.
AL, again, not me. Hypothetical for AK Lee. Bryce Mitchell has you in a bear hug, telling you to lead the nation in prayer. What do you do? Well, guys, as a non-practicing Catholic, I have been in many situations where I have had to go along with prayer. Not to say that I am not a spiritual person. I'm a spiritual cat as much as anybody. But I would not call myself the most spiritual person. So I do know how to play along. That's a nice way to put it. So Bryce Mitchell, if you want to rap on that Bible for 5 minutes and have me next to you,
not Dungeons and Dragons.
I'm sure I can handle it. Jose, what are you chuckling about?
When you say play along, it just that's I don't know. Like, it's not like we're playing a tabletop game or something.
I'm just saying, if anyone's ever been to some sort of service where they're not quite like, you know, jiving, you know, vibing with what's going on, you kind of have to fake it till you make it. And praise be, I have done so before. But yeah, I'd be all right. I don't know how you guys would react in the situation.
All right, some more comments. Potential Gamrot's next fight.
AL again saying Gamrot versus a bored Holloway on a side court. I don't know.
Nah.
You're shaking your head. No. Yeah, it's not
never gonna happen. Yeah, I think Max Holloway would jump up to fight Justin Gaethje for the championship, but I don't see anyone.
Yeah.
Or, like, I don't think that's happening. Max Holloway is in that same boat as Gaethje, Poirier, Chandler, where it's like, we've done it. Like, I get it. I just want to fight these massive names.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and because they're not getting paid, more or less or whatever to fight these no names like Gamrot. No names. Let me see what we got here. What else we got here?
Can we talk about Chris Leben?
Oh,
I've got JRayBO2 here. I'll just grab this one. It says, isn't it? And I saw other people asking about Chris Leben. Chris Leben judged the very first fight of the night between Tim Masvidal and Mansoor Rendon, and also the Tim Means Andre Fialho fight, which didn't really require scorecards, but all the judges had it 20-18 for Tim Means going to third round. So nothing to talk about there. I'll read Joseph Moses. Thoughts on the media asking Montserrat Rendon what her thoughts were on Chris Leben being the only judge to not award her the W versus Tamir Masvidal. I also have JRayBO2 in the comments calling it a doo-doo card. Full disclosure, I probably was not watching the fight super closely, so I do not know how doo-doo this card was. From what I could see, I didn't get the sense that either fighter was dominating. I know Rendon was giving Vidal a lot of problems with the grappling, but I think this is where we get into the control versus damage discussion. But again, I almost don't feel qualified to talk about it. Did you guys have a better view of no, I think the dissenting round was round two.
No media member scored it for Vidal.
Yeah.
Every media member had it for Rendon. At 29-28. I'm assuming it was let me see what the dissenting round was. Yes, round two. So I'm assuming it was round two. I don't actually remember round two. I was kind of watching loosely. So
women's bantamweights, guys. Women's bantamweights. We owe both these women an apology for not paying. It's the hottest division in the sport, and we really should be paying more attention to it. Congrats on Mansoor Rendon for remaining on.
It's Jed and Damon's favorite division.
I think. Oh my gosh! All the time, they just DM me randomly. Can we talk about women's bantamweight matchups today?
They don't even DM me. They just tweet about it.
Check their Twitter feeds. It's nothing.
Also, this question is asking what we think about the media asking. Don't care.
Yeah, what was that?
I didn't go for it.
Jose, you are the media. You are the guy who asked.
No, I'm like, but like, I don't care what my fellow media people ask when it comes to this. Like, I would have asked it if I was theirs. I don't think this is a nothing burger, whether they asked or didn't ask.
Okay. I think the interesting thing is, you know, so let's just kind of, just for the sake of argument, Chris Leben had a bad scorecard. This isn't a good scorecard. So all those fighters make the best judges. That's not true. Paying attention and knowing what you're looking for makes the best judges. So I'm not saying Chris Leben he's a bad judge or anything, but I'm just saying the whole fighters being a judge is being a better option isn't true. Just paying attention and being good at your job is what's most important.
Yeah. And again, I'm sure Chris Leben did his best. This is his first time ever doing UFC card, and he's worked his way up to this level. Mm-hmm. Everyone turns in the back.
And I've seen Chris Leben do plenty of, I think he's refed. He refs down in California all the time. So I see him all the time. So I'm happy that he's now getting a travel stipend. So we can go to Vegas and do all that fun stuff there.
I think we'll see him again. I don't think this was an egregious. Again, maybe the card was bad. Again, I don't know. Fortunately, it was on a fight that was pretty low stakes, and I didn't hear too many people talking about it.
I will be. The story moving forward is if like he can't judge certain fights because has relationships with coaches and fighters. Mm. That's more of the, you know, if tomorrow all of a sudden there's a story that like Vidal trained at the same gym as Chris Leben, or they had the same coach or whatever, then that would be a story. But right now, I don't think it's the biggest deal in the world.
Oh yes, the Diego Sanchez Ross Pearson situation, of course. Oh gosh, never forget. Casey, what else we got?
You run
the show. You let me know how many.
Yeah. Are you guys doing on to the next tomorrow?
We are, and I have not even thought about matchups.
All right, I'm not going to bring too many matchup questions. Okay. No, people are like,
I just want to say, with this background, AK, you look like Jesus Christ.
Someone asked why I'm glowing. And let me just say, this particular poster, the face-to-face, all I think about when I see these face-to-face posters are the classic cover of Hall & Oates' H2O album. If you guys have never seen it, Google it. I don't know why they do these face-to-face posters, because that's the only thing I think of. One of these guys missing is a wispy mustache to complete the look, but
notably my dad's least favorite musical act ever.
Oh, that's saying a lot.
Wow.
I'm just saying, that's literally when I hear Hall & Oates, that's the first thing I think of.
I don't think they're that bad.
Whenever growing up, I'm never like, God, I hate Hall & Oates. And he just like, changed the
just randomly.
He also hates that band America, you know, the, I've been through the desert on a horse, whatever that. Did they say that? My dad's like, that song is, he's like, that song sucks.
Wait, so Hall & Oates says, Hall & Oates' big song was Private Eyes, right?
Private Eyes, You Make My Dreams Come True, Man Eater. They had a lot of good songs.
Watching you. We're done.
Okay, we're done. Great way to close out the show. Thanks everyone for joining us. I thought Vegas 79 was a pretty good card. It's always going to seem that much worse when we don't.
Wait, perfectly fun. I wish the main event had happened a little bit more.
Very unsatisfying.
Yeah, overall, good card. That was poopy, but here we are.
Props to all the fighters as usual. Props to all the staff who puts this stuff together. Props to Jose Youngs. Props to EK Sled. Props to me. Props to, you know, you gotta love yourself, guys.
Hey, props to Jared Leto showing up for UFC Apex card. Front row, baby. Jared Leto.
He's legit. Props to Jared Leto, I guess. And props to everyone, of course, for tuning in again. I cannot thank you guys enough. Thank you for letting us do this, letting us come to your homes. So, peace out for now.
Bye.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.